Welcome to Rooster Radio. I'm Andrew Montesi with James Begley. I was out at dinner recently and finally got to have a decent chat with Josh Birchall, the English lad who will soon marry my cousin Emma. After hearing Josh's business story, I had to get him onto Rooster Radio. At 17, Josh started his first business from his bedroom with little more than £1,000 and the name of a Chinese manufacturer, which was given to him by a friend. This was in the early 2000s, well before the online shopping boom. After successfully importing and selling one product, Josh reinvested, moving more and more products online. In the blink of an eye, he was generating tens of thousands of pounds of revenue each month. Business then went to another level when he started buying up cheap stock from a major electrical retailer and selling it at scale via Amazon, which helped push annual revenue beyond £1 million. As the online market changed, so did Josh's strategy. Taking what he'd learned about online retail and Amazon, he bought up businesses without an online presence, gave them an online sales funnel, and flipped them at a higher price. His companies covered everything from car headlights to candles. Josh talks about his story, what he's learned about online retail and sales, moving fast and cashing in on opportunities, how Amazon will impact Australia, and much more. Enjoy our chat with Josh Birchall. Josh, welcome to Rooster Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're at a dinner party and that painful question pops up when you're meeting someone for the first time. What do you do? What's your answer?
Depends who the person is.
So I'm me. I'm a male. I'm 30. How old am I? 36.
Wow.
Almost 37. Adelaide born and bred. What would your response
normally
be?
I would say I work for an online retail company.
Yep.
Yeah. And then depends the level of interest.
Oh,
after
I go
that
like
point.
Amazon.
Yeah. And then I would say a bit about what I do. I hate saying I own a business, or I would never say I'm an entrepreneur or anything like
that. What
is that? It just sounds big headed, doesn't it? Like, no, I'm not about that really.
Yeah.
So, but if they've got a real interest, then I'll probably go in a bit more about what I do. But if they just brush over the fact that that's my job, then
so if they
we'll
have
move on.
Some sort of online experience or sort of tech type background,
yeah,
would you be more inclined to sort of lay it out a bit more?
Yeah, definitely.
And so what would that be?
Then I would say I've worked in online retail for about 10, 12 years. I import a lot of things from around the world and just distribute them online through the Amazon network in the UK and throughout Europe. So that's basically what I do in a nutshell.
So, and I don't know if you have the numbers on hand, but how many businesses or websites, separate businesses and websites, would there have been for you over the last 10 to 12 years?
Different businesses, I've probably had 8, maybe. I went through a period of a couple of years where I would just flip businesses that had no real online presence. So I got through quite a few in a short space of time, but probably had 2 or 3 main businesses that have lasted past the 3-year point, I would say, yeah.
And where did it start for you?
So I was 17. I worked in IT, just come out of college, which would be your high school maybe. So 17, working a job, and they were like, you need to work all over Christmas. And I was like, no, I don't fancy that really. And my whole life I'd want to work in business. So I was thinking that is not what I want to do. So I thought, I want to own a business. I've got no idea what I want to do, but I do not want to be working here at Christmas. So I thought, the only thing I can do is quit my job. Give me 30 days. In England, when you hand a notice in for work, you have 30 days to, you owe the company 30 more days of work. So I thought, I've got 30 days to work it out. It's quite exciting. So I handed my notes in, had no idea what I wanted to do in any way, shape or form. And there was a guy in my church who was importing products from China, and this was when nobody was really doing it. And he had a full-time job as well, so he had this website that he would just import laptop products for. And he'd heard what I was doing, and he said, why don't you use this supplier that I use? I haven't got time to really use all the products that they have on offer. So as long as you don't touch the laptop area, here's my supplier details, do with it what you want. If you want to do anything, go for it. If not, that's fine. So I kind of, in those days, there was eBay. Amazon didn't really exist. This is maybe 12 years ago, 11, 12 years ago. So it was eBay and a website called play.com, which I don't think ever made it to Australia. At the time, I was into gaming. So there was when the PlayStation Portable came out, the PSP, I was reading, I had all the magazines and I was quite into tech. And I was reading the reviews and everyone was saying, great game, battery life's terrible. So, and I'd read that maybe two or three times. Every review of the PSP was that the battery life was terrible. Excuse me. So I thought, and the battery you could actually take out of the machine and swap it with another one. So I thought, why not just import from this website backup batteries for your PSP? So if you took it on a flight or you wanted to play more than a couple of hours, you could just swap the batteries out. So that's what I did. I bought generic PSP batteries from China. I think I had about £1,000, about $2,000.
How many batteries did that get you?
I think that bought me maybe 200. And this was getting close to Christmas. So this was all in the 30 days that I was still working at this job. And I have memories of that shipment reaching me within the 30 days. So I'd literally, if you can call it a business, had started on the road to something before I'd actually finished my job. And I remember those selling out within maybe a week.
And how did you sell them?
On play.com.
On play.com.
Yeah. So that's like an old school Amazon.
Yeah.
So it would be Play, they would sell their own stuff, but you could also add a marketplace for third-party sellers.
And no one else was doing the battery thing?
No.
And I don't know the mechanics of it, but did you have to advertise within Play or is it just people searching for battery
stuff? No, you'd advertise in Play.
Yeah.
So as much as Amazon works now, I'm pretty sure they stole it all from Play. They would have a listing. Whereas eBay, every listing is separate. They would have like a master listing of a PSP battery, either a Sony branded one or say a generic third-party one. And any seller would list within that master listing. So pretty much if you were the cheapest, you had like the buy box, it's called. So I was the cheapest, and I was pretty sure I was the only one at the time doing it. And as it was coming up to Christmas, it's a great gift. If you're buying someone that, you buy them a case and a spare battery.
And you've spent £1,000, but how much did you make in a net sense?
Probably in a week, I probably made £2,000 from that thousand in clear profit.
And now you've just got to ship. Now you've got to package them up and send them out.
So I remember asking because I was at work, and I remember the delivery coming to me. So I started selling them, but I hadn't actually got the product in my hand. Because I was always at work when the delivery man would come, and the only time was to pick him up was between 6 and 9 in the morning. So I remember asking for to cut my dinner break at work, start an hour later, so I could get to the sorting office at 6 a.m, get them back to my house, wrap them all up, and post them all out. And I'm pretty sure I'd sold most of them before I'd actually even seen the product. Yeah, so I just kind of trusted that they were.
So your first shipment comes in, you sell it within a week. What happens next?
Buy more. So I'm living at home in my bedroom, 17 years old, got no bills. I think I had a car at that point. That was kind of my only outgoing. So I just spend that 2,000 I've just made plus the original 1,000 and buy as many as I can. I think I had about 3 or 4 shipments before Christmas. And then I believe after Christmas when I sold all those, I started to diversify into cases and screen protectors, all for the PSP. And then as the time went on, the Nintendo DS came out, which was huge. So I did the same kind of thing, styluses, cases, just really simple, easy products that couldn't really go wrong.
I always want to know, as a young kid, and we've heard a couple of stories like this, all of a sudden they're cash flow positive in this little business. Like, do you just ring your mates and say, you wouldn't believe what's going on, or you just rock up one day and you got 500 quid in your pocket and you're sort of flapping around? Like, did you brag about it?
I probably didn't, because I'm not that kind of guy. As I say, I don't really tell people what I do for a job.
Yeah, I wouldn't brag about it either. I'm not that sort of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I was never really over the top with spending or anything like that. And I would literally, all that money, that was not spending money, that was reinvestment money. So from an early age, I knew that any penny I had in, as long as I had gas in my car, I could pay my insurance, all of that was going back into stock.
He's far too diligent.
It's far too businesslike at an early age. I want stories of getting on the froths and like blowing all your money.
Yeah, I got a friend who I met a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me about when he was younger. I don't know if you have The Apprentice over here.
Yeah.
But he was on that, and he started a coffee shop, and I think he made his first £30,000 in cash through the coffee shop and just bought a brand new BMW and he had to sell it within like 2 months because he realised, oh, that's not actually profit.
Yeah, so how big did this first business get?
So I'm sitting at home and within 12 months I'm turning over £60,000 a month.
Jeez.
So well over $100,000 just sitting in a bedroom at home. Yeah, so I was just a small room, floor to ceiling, storage boxes. I didn't have room for a desk, so I just sit on my bed on my laptop and then just pack it all up at the end of the day, and off to the post office I went, and I'd stand in the post office maybe 2 hours while they were posting it all off. Yeah, so it was... I couldn't believe it, really.
So what are you thinking at this point? Are you thinking about, okay, what's my next step, or what are you thinking about a broader plan for your life at that time, or are you just thinking, this is just so good, I've just got to...
I just thought I've just got to ride this wave as long as I can. I'd say that's like the golden time of online retail, when I was probably one of the only people doing it. Now you bring a product out and everyone's watching you like a hawk, so then 20 other people are selling that product within a week. So there's not that room anymore to do what I used to do, so you've got to be a lot more clever about it.
And what was the life cycle of that golden period for the gaming stuff?
I'd say probably 18 months, and I thought, this has got to get... I can't just sit in my room. I need to actually start a proper company. I just couldn't manage it on my own anymore. It was just far too crazy. So at that point, I met with a guy, and we decided to go into business together. And so we just started doing it on a far larger scale. Our product catalogue grew massively to maybe over 100 products. And we had our own offices and warehouse and stuff like that. And that's kind of what birthed my first big company, really. Yeah.
So how big did that company get? Did you have multiple employees?
Yeah, we had employees, but it was with Amazon. I think at this point, Amazon had come into the picture now and was taking over. It was proven in America, so I think pretty soon as it launched in the UK, it was a big hit because everyone had heard. In the same way, it's hopefully coming to Australia. Everybody knows Amazon's massive, so it'll probably take off straight away. So in the same way it came to the UK, Amazon and they've become the big player within probably 18 months of me starting. So most of the products were going through Amazon. Sorry,
and what did that mean for your business? So
I now had two streams to sell my products. So play.com was probably as good still, but now I had this other massive marketplace to sell products through. So my business pretty much doubled.
And at the peak of your business, you know, number of people working for you, revenue, that sort of stuff.
Probably close to £1 million turnover a year. One member of staff plus me and my business partner as director, so we were quite hands-on. But it's a very simple business. It's so easy. All you do is your product comes in, you list it, and then you pack it and send it off.
That's the beauty.
No advertising, no more. It's so easy.
Minimal employees, minimal overheads.
Exactly. All you need is a bit of space, and that's it, to store your products.
Did you think at this point that this is my career path now, or did you always know the writing would be on the wall at some point and that you would need to adapt?
I think I didn't think too far ahead. It's probably into maybe the year two or three now of my business. We kind of stumbled across an opportunity with England's biggest electrical retailer, which I'm not sure your equivalent over here, but sell like a Best Buy.
Harvey Norman, JB Hi-Fi, those type of...
Yeah, so imagine JB Hi-Fi, they have stores all over the country. Say a new PlayStation comes out, they have to phase out the old model, and then obviously they put it on sale, and I think after 23 days it ended up in a warehouse. So we, right place, right time, met a guy who was like, we've got a warehouse as big as 10 football fields, we've dead stocking, it's been written off by the company, and it's just sitting there. We have a couple of companies come in each week, and for instance, Canon camera, we've got 2,000 sitting there. You just come in, you name your price for all 2,000, and we go from there.
Like a clearance center, just
exactly. Yeah. But there was maybe four companies doing it. I think they probably thought we were bigger than we were, which is fine. So we would go in and buy the best products at the most absolutely outrageous prices. So a Canon camera that's maybe £400, we would buy 1,000 of them for £50 each, and they were still selling for £400. Obviously, it was technology, so we had to be careful with a few products because the life cycle of technology is not very long. But say, like, memory cards for a camera or something like that that doesn't really phase out too quickly, we would buy them for maybe 10, 20% of the shelf price. But you had to buy in massive bulk. So our money quickly went from importing from abroad to ploughing it all into this business venture that was too good to be true. Yeah, so we would spend maybe £50,000 a week buying stock. We were getting money from anywhere we could because we thought, this ain't going to last. This can't be. This is too good. It can't last.
And did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, anything we bought, we sold pretty quickly. So our business grew very fast, but we were never under the illusion that this would last forever. So we kind of, every Wednesday morning when we were allowed into the... It's a crazy story. When I think about it, it's crazy. But every Wednesday morning we were allowed in and you would take whatever you could, as much as you could before anybody else got there.
It's like you loot the warehouse every week with your bag of goodies.
So we ended up being purposely making friends with every guy in that warehouse. They invited us to play football with them on Thursday night, soccer. And we would take them crates of beer. We wanted to be their best friends. We wanted to get that call when those lorries turned up at that warehouse. We wanted to be the first there, and it just so happened that it did. So we would get a call maybe a couple of hours before. We would go in there and have the pick of whatever we wanted, and then the other couple of guys would come in. And
was there a point where you just checked that this was legal? Like, you're like, is this...
I didn't care.
You didn't care, okay. No.
But from what we heard, it had all been written off as dead stock. So it was kind of at the manager's discretion of what they took for it. So we would make them crazy offers. Sometimes it was accepted, sometimes we'd have to go a bit higher, but it was never probably over 30% of the shelf price.
But you're just making their life easier, I guess, because they just don't want to deal with this, and if they can get some money for it, great.
They didn't really care. Yeah. As long as they had some money for it, they were happy.
So what were the sort of margins then?
I mean, sometimes we'd buy cameras worth £4,000 for less than 1,000. Sometimes we'd buy PS3 games for $1. Some of them you could make 10 times your money back. It just depended who was working that day. Just talking about it, it just sounds
really
ridiculous.
So it was that ad hoc. You would rock into this warehouse and it's just whatever you could grab
quickly,
on the site,
bang. It's literally like Christmas Day. You'd walk in here, be like, what's in here this week? So like a gaming keyboard. There'd be like pallets and pallets of them. And it would be like, okay, well, but you had to take everything. So if, number one, you had to work out if you had the space to keep it, the money to pay for it, and
the
it
trucks.
Actually sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming this is because there's a convergence of people all of a sudden now buying up online, but some of the traditional retailers don't really know how to maximize it yet. And you're sort of plugging the two together and helping. What year are we talking? Like, what was going on at a broader horizon?
This is probably 8, 9 years ago now. Online retail was just taking off. I mean, now in the UK, Amazon's more than 50% of every pound spent online, more than 50% of it comes from Amazon. But at that point, the average Joe probably wouldn't have heard of Amazon. Yeah.
What were the bigger players doing at the time, given this is right at the start of online marketing, online retail? Did some of these bigger guys start to take notice? Were they going, geez, how are these guys able to sell our products for so much cheaper? Like, were you on the radar?
I don't think we were, no. I don't think they ever took note. I mean, now they have, obviously, years later. So that kind of came to an end after about 12, 18 months where it wasn't the company took notice, but this warehouse was so big that to deal with lots of people to be able to get rid of it, and they also had a part of the warehouse which was returns and damages of stock, And obviously we didn't really want, because I've got no technical knowledge. I don't know how a TV works, but I know how to sell one. So we would just leave all that, and pretty much everybody would, because there was so much good stuff. And then a company came in, a huge auctioneer came in and said, we'll take everything every week, because they had the cash flow, they had the staff and everything, and they had multiple locations to get rid of this stock. So that kind of wiped out everybody, and that was my business gone overnight. We turned up and it was like, that's it, game over. But it wasn't like we were expecting yeah. it to happen.
And I was going to ask, to this point, I mean, you've stumbled across some amazing opportunities. To this point, were there any kind of tactics or strategies employed which just didn't work? Either at a sort of retail or buying of stock point of view.
So on Amazon, there's a program you can use which displays the rank of a product. So it would say, this camera is the fifth best-selling camera on Amazon, and it is the 500th bestseller in electronics. So it would break it down very easily to see if this product was actually selling, and that rank would change every hour. So you could pretty quickly assess if this was actually selling or not, which made our lives very easy, because if it was over a certain rank, we wouldn't touch it, because there was so much to go at, we could be very picky. So I think if it was not in the top 5,000 products on Amazon, we wouldn't buy it. So we would go around, use this program and say, okay, well, that's the 50th bestseller on Amazon. We'll, that's our first priority. We'll go and try and buy that and then work our way through. And then anything that was over a certain number, we would just leave. So it's pretty much proven. You knew that product was going to sell.
So you nailed everything.
Yeah. Well, it was made easy for us. I'm not saying I was clever or a genius. It was just easy. Like anybody could have done it. You just had to have... be willing to take that risk to spend that money.
So to this point, if we go back, you've finished high school or college. This mate of yours, by the way, this mate, was he aware that this tip that he gave you about importing was the catalyst for this whole?
I mean, in years, I've obviously told him and said that without you, none of this would have happened. It may have happened, but not as quickly as it did. He's fully aware. He no longer does any of that because hot. In the way I've had to evolve,
yeah.
It's kind of a side project to him. Importing stuff from China is no longer viable because everyone and his dog's doing it.
Yeah.
So he no longer does that, whereas we've had to evolve because that was my job. Whereas he had a great job, he just did this as a bit of pocket money on the side.
So on that, as a learning experience, as a young bloke, what were you learning about business and sales and the online world?
We'd very quickly work out what you had to buy something for. I mean, you had your seller fees. You had very minimal overheads when I started. You worked out how much something would cost to post. But as I say, there's no marketing, there's no staff, there's no... Mm. It was very simple. So the way I learned was I'd done business at college, so I had a rough understanding of stuff. I was reading books in my spare time. But I pretty much just learned as I went along. So I was learning with that £1,000 how to make 2,000. And then when I've got 100,000, it's the same principle.
One thing in a lot of these sort of importing and reselling tales, Monty, is that I think you and I are constantly looking for like the magic formula. They keep saying, it's pretty easy. We buy stuff X amount, we sell it for this, and then we've got, you know, obviously...
It's definitely not easy anymore because if a factory produces... say cases for a Nintendo, well, an iPad now in 2017, they would sell a generic line of cases that everybody sells because it's so easy, Alibaba, you can go on there, you can see their range of products, everybody will sell them online. So now it's about going to that factory and saying, I want to brand it myself. So now you have to pay for marketing, branding, everything. It's not as easy as it used to be in any way, shape or form.
So what was the next business model?
So the door was closed with electrical. So we were thinking there has to be another sector in retail that this happens, where stuff comes onto a shelf, it has to be replaced and it has to go somewhere. So we started researching what other sector we could use. Clothing goes out of date. You've got to think of something that holds its value once it's gone off the shelf, because most things, it goes off the shelf because it's lost its value. So we started doing toys. So we thought with a lot of toys, they hold the value. Some of them increase in value. So we started approaching retailers like supermarkets. Anyone that sold toys, we approached them and were trying to work out what their strategy was for clearing their stock. So we ended up with about three or four different suppliers, big suppliers, probably bigger than the electrical guys, so massive supermarket chains, and we would buy their clearance in the exact same way. So an early example is, so Farm and Sam, I'm guessing you get that in ours, that had now gone off the TV, that stopped producing the toys, that sat in a warehouse for at least a year. They had probably 20,000 Farm and Sam fire trucks. It had now come back on the TV as reruns, but nobody made the products anymore. So now the products were now worth a lot of money because no one manufactured them. So we were given the opportunity exact same way with the electricals, but with toys.
And on the same platforms.
Exactly. So you look at the rank, is it good? The margins weren't as high. I think that electrical opportunity was a freak happening. But you could at least double your money on everything. We made sure we'd only buy stuff that you double your money on. There was no picking of prices like there used to be. It was, this is the set price, but you've got to still buy in large quantities. And we found toys actually increased in value, a lot of them if you were quite good at picking.
So is it getting harder now? Are there more competitors coming to the market?
At this point?
Yeah.
Yes, we aren't the only ones doing this. It's a case of what we had to be clever was finding out. So they would say, we never actually went to these warehouses anymore, so it was all on the telephone. They would say, okay, we've got a large quantity of Farm and Sam trucks. If you buy 1,000, it's this price. We had to try and get to how many they actually had, because we'd know after they'd call us, they'd call somebody else and say, 1,000's this price, which is no good to us because then we're in a bidding war with another company to try and shift these products. So we had to, so if there was say 4,000, we had to get to that number, and then we either bought 4,000 or we bought none, because for us, we don't want four people selling 1,000 of them, because we want to have all of them so we can pick our own price to sell them at, and we know there's no competition because they aren't being manufactured. So if they're all gone, we've got them all. So now we had to be, that's what the issue was trying to work out how many in the country actually existed.
So you're becoming a bit of an expert in sort of this methodology of understanding the product. Were you immersing yourselves in these products? So the moment that you decide on toys, how would you immerse yourself in kind of the broader, you know, demand and the brands? And
so my business partner at the time, he had two small kids, so he kind of knew what was popular. I was still living at home. I was probably early 20s at this point. I didn't really have a clue, but you make it your mission to work out. But also with Amazon ranking tool, you don't need to know anything. Like, I could look at a product and never have heard of it and see that it's a good sell on Amazon. I don't care if I've never heard of it.
You really did live and die by that index, didn't you?
Yeah, because it was, and it worked every time. There's a couple of things we bought and the rank would die off for whatever reason and it would be slower to sell. But nothing ever lasted more than 6 months. Yeah.
So you know that there's a shelf life on this style of business. Do you have a plan B, a safety net, given that you know that it could end at any time?
Yeah. You'd think I would, but I probably didn't know. I think in the way I found it so easy to go from electrics to toys, I thought if this ever ended. But now we're not talking about one supplier. We had about four. So the chances of all four finishing at once were very slim. And towards the end of it, we were starting to go direct to the manufacturer rather than... So we thought, there's no real way this can end. And it's still ongoing for the guy who owns the business now. So it came to a point where he had kids, a big mortgage. I was still living at home. I had a VW Golf. That was my biggest expense. I was still wanting to take big risks. whereas he become comfortable at the level of earnings he had, which is totally fine. But I had nothing to lose at all. If he lost his money, he's got kids and a wife at home, I've got nothing. So it doesn't matter to me. So I'm wanting to take big risks. He's not. So that's when it kind of came to a head where we thought this isn't going to work anymore. So one day we sat down and said, I think we were both under the impression that we knew this was coming to an end working together. We were good friends, so it was hard. We were friends before it happened, which I'd probably advise against in business, as much as you can, you know, if you can trust somebody, but it doesn't make it easy when stuff comes to a head. So I kind of said, you either buy me out or I'll buy you out. It came to that. So he decided that he didn't want to sell the business, and he ended up buying me out.
Monty hates that I ask these questions, but I always want to know numbers and figures, and sounds a bit crass, I know. But at that point, he's bought you out. If you sort of sold everything, being your car, and decided to just take like a bit of a balance sheet, what would you have at your disposal at that point? What would your
personally,
worth, yeah, what would your worth be at that point? In your mid to early or early to mid 20s?
I was probably 22 at the 22. Time.
Ballpark.
Less than £500,000.
Oh, terrible.
I'm trying to think back. Probably £300,000 or £400,000.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say.
And then what was the catalyst to move on to kind of your what you saw as the next opportunity to have an impact?
So at this point, this is where I probably did get a little stupid in my spending, but I didn't buy crazy things. I bought companies. That I felt a bit invincible, like everything I've touched so far has been easy, so it's going to continue in that way. So I think in that year where I sold the company, I bought a couple of properties, and then with the rest of the money I'd earned and also from the sale of the company, I bought a few businesses that were, the product was good, but they had no real online presence because not everything had gone that way yet. So I kind of thought anything I stick on Amazon is going to sell. And for some of them, it did. I mean, I was buying car headlight companies, watch companies. Like, there was no correlation between any of them. But I just knew the format to sell something on Amazon was, so it doesn't matter what the product is, as long as I knew how to sell it. That's all that mattered.
What were the mechanics of buying the business? Like, what were you actually buying?
So, obviously, online is not easy. I mean, it might sound silly, but some of them had websites, so you would do a transfer of ownership of the website, and it would literally be, and then say if they had Amazon or whatever, it would literally be, you'd sit there with the owner, you'd transfer him the money, and then you would change the password on the, that is literally.
So, what's your due diligence?
A lot of them had their own websites. They just didn't use online marketplaces like Amazon and eBay. So you can't really make up your figures on a Shopify website. It's kind of there to see. Mm. So you kind of go over it.
It's transparent.
Yeah. It's very hard to make anything up. So there were no lawyers, solicitors involved. I mean, we're not talking huge money. I think the most ever paid for business was sell at £40,000, which is like $80,000. So it's not massive amounts of money in terms of business, but there was what you see is what you get, really.
And how did you determine the value or what you would pay? What sort of return and what structure of return would you look for?
Normally, the gross profit at the end of the year had to be at least half of what I was paying for it. And I had to believe that I could double the turnover within 12 months because that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to double the turnover and then sell it for double the price. That was my naive strategy, which actually worked 9 times out of 10. But I mean, I bought companies, well, I think one that was just like a money pit, like the branding of it.
What was it?
So I bought a watch company that was its own brand. And I've never sold anything that's not a already branded, like a Sony or anything like that. This was its own brand in itself. So I was very naive on what it took to sell something that I had to market. I'd never done it. It had all been done for me. So I think I actually sold that for a profit in the end. But to get to that point was very hard, and I spent an awful lot of money. So like bringing out new lines and pay-per-click, SEO, Facebook advertising, I'd never done any of that. And I was kind of very naive to what it took for anyone to actually go onto the website.
And it's against your model, isn't it, to deal with the marketing?
So you're taking what? Some these businesses which aren't really streamlined and don't have a great online presence, you're ramping that up. Who would you sell to?
So in England, there's a website called businessesforsale.com. It's just a website that just lists any business you can, so you pay some money to go on there and be a member.
Flipper. Yeah,
Flipper. Yep. So I'd buy and sell all through that. And I found it quite easy to sell the businesses. But as you say, you're not really buying anything, so unless somebody was in online retail already, you'd be very sceptical. So they'd call me and say, so you want 100,000 for this business, what am I getting? But you're getting my log on to the website and the stock. And you'd say, well, that sounds ridiculous. But that's literally all it was. And I knew that when I was buying it. But when it comes to sell it, a lot of people think, I actually need something meaty for that kind of money. Mm. But that's all you needed.
And you'd shown the growth, and really what you're selling is the potential to continue to grow.
Yeah, so I would try and get to that crest of the wave where someone's seen I've bought it and it's shot up within 12 months. They want to see they want to see a plan from me. So I would always put a plan together to show how that would continue to grow. So I'd put kind of the foundations of Amazon in and SEO and stuff. I had to give them a reason to buy it.
Because that was a chunk
of your IP, almost.
Yeah.
Because that was going to be my point. I mean, you're taking sort of a business which might not seem sophisticated, you're ramping it up, and then what type of sophisticated investor would come and say, well, I can continue this trend, knowing that you've probably maxed the value for a period of time?
I didn't believe I had maxed the value.
Okay.
But I wasn't interested at that time in hanging on to it for years. I kind of wanted to quickly turn my money around.
Yeah.
And I think at that time, that's what I thought more probably gifting was in business, was doing that. So I did it 3 or 4 times very quickly. And then I kind of got a bit stung with the last one, the watch company, where I thought, this ain't as easy as I thought it was.
So the model was to almost get it halfway up the hill.
Yes,
so you're not maxing out. You're deliberately leaving
a good plan that seems easy to do to get it even further. And I think that when buying a company is very important to leave that space so that you can kind of prove that you can make a lot more out of this than I am.
And as a quick summary, can you just list the businesses that you kind of did this with?
So I had a car headlight company, a candle company, food, watches. I had a outdoor boot camp company, just a whole range of things.
Cool.
Just like, as I say, the correlation between any of them is absolutely nothing.
And what was your little research system, just in a bit more detail, in terms of determining whether to buy the candle company or not?
So I would
just double
look at their website. Look at their website. Is there anything in my limited knowledge that I could improve on that? Is it on Amazon? If not, then I'm thinking this is a good, because I can put it on Amazon and you're pretty much guaranteed, because I'm probably 6-7 years into Amazon at this point, I'd say I know what I'm doing. So you kind of think if there's no Amazon presence, then that's a massive stream of income that from day one can be tapped into. So if they've got an amazing website and an Amazon that's good, I won't even go near it, because I think I've got nothing to add to that company. Whereas if I think my knowledge is in what looks good online and Amazon, if they ain't exploiting that, then I'm going to tap into that.
And you would look to double the turnover in the first year and sell at double the price.
Yeah,
and the gross profit had to be, you had to double the gross profit.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I would need the gross profit to be at least half of what I was paying for the company.
That's right.
Yeah.
How did the more savvy businesses then change your landscape when businesses started to go, well, we're going to AdWords ourselves, we're going to start to market directly to consumers on the internet. Did the Amazon world change at all for you over this journey, or is it still the same?
So companies now rather than use a third-party person like myself, would just go direct. So the JB Hi-Fi, they would now have their own Amazon store. So it kind of quickly caught on that. So this is where I now am in my Amazon career, so to speak, where I have to brand my own products because there's no room anywhere for people just importing a product from China.
Even though you've been down the watch path where you got burned by having to sort of do that yourself?
I was paying... So I was buying the company for a lot of money to start with. I was spending a lot of money on stock. This was kind of, I could control it from the very start. I could bring in one product rather than the watch company had like 40 lines. So to keep restocking that and refreshing it and SEOing 40 products was a lot of money. So I kind of sold everything at one point and I was left with nothing. Well, sorry, before I sold the last few, I'd started what I do now, which is importing food from mainly the US and across Europe. Kind of saw that that was going to possibly take off. So then as I sold everything, I thought, okay, I'll concentrate on this now. So that's where I kind of am today. I've been doing that about 3 years, I think. Yeah.
Importing food. What are the what are the mechanics of that?
Okay, so with a candle company, I would import... So Yankee Candles in the UK, well, it's the biggest selling candle in America.
I love that you start your greengrocer story with an anecdote from your candle business.
Yep, it's exactly the same. As I say, none of these products match, but it's exactly it's the same. Everything you do is exactly the same.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I jumped in.
So with the candles, they were the biggest selling candle in America, quickly becoming the biggest selling candle in England. So at this point, everyone's selling them. Like, nothing's anymore is easy. So what I think is, okay, I'll import... So I was importing nearly 200,000 candles a year. So what I would do is I'd take a candle that's, say, 2 inches tall, group them together in a box into a ready-made gift. So I had, like, a Christmas gift box, which would be in a gold box, the clear lid so you could see the candles, gold ribbon on it. That, I'm adding value to it because everybody's selling the individual candles. Nobody's going to buy a $2 candle online because it's going to cost more than that to ship it. So if I can put six together, make it into a gift, so as soon as that comes through your door, you can give that to somebody. You haven't got to wrap it or anything, or you can send it direct to somebody. I'm adding value and also grouping it together so it's a better deal. So it was kind of the added value route I went down. So when that was coming to an end, I thought there's got to be, in the same way the electrics and the toys came together, this, the candles and the food, there's got to be some way I can use this model to do it with something else. So at the time, American foods were becoming big in England. There was like, there's a department store called Selfridges, which you may have seen Mr. Selfridge. I think it's quite big over here. So that's a massive department store that would import American food. So like Lucky Charms is a cereal that in America is like $2 a box, but they were selling it for like $16 a box and people were queuing up for it. So I thought there's got to be a way to import this, but quickly, as I say, everybody jumps on it. So you can't really... have 30 people selling the same cereal box because you're just going to get outpriced every time. So I thought, okay, we'll group it together, sell 4 boxes of cereal at the same time in a hamper. So again, I'm using the same format as the candles. Everybody's selling candles, but I'm selling 6 candles at once so I can sell it for a cheap price because I'm only paying 1 shipping, not 6. Put them in a hamper and sell them. So that was kind of where my niche came in with that.
And the margins much better doing it that way as well?
Margins are better, not great, definitely not the making 10 times your money, but more sustainable. I'm in control of what I'm doing. There's longevity in it. I'm in control of what I bring in. I can brand it myself. So I think that year one we sold maybe 300 hampers. Year two I think it was 12,000, and then last year it was like 40,000 hampers.
So and who to?
Direct to consumers. So anybody buying online. So it's massive seasonal business because it's a great Christmas gift. With food, it's not so easy because you have to look at the sell-by, the best before end dates. So it's not the easiest thing to manage your stock, because obviously it takes a long time to get to the from the US to England. If you run out, you've got to wait 6 weeks for it to come back. So it's definitely not the easiest business to manage stock-wise. But over the last couple of years, I've kind of learned stock levels and stuff. But they've always exceeded.
And you're advertising now online?
No. Still through Amazon.
Still? People buy cereal.
Yeah.
What does the... I saw recently they purchased...
Whole Foods.
Whole Foods? I mean, yeah. Does that change anything?
No, because... No. Whole Foods is massive in America, but there's maybe 5 stores in the UK.
I know why you can come here and make a mozza here in Australia, because we're...
Make a what, sorry?
Mozza. Make a lot.
Yeah, I'm
don't even know where that. Don't even know where that comes from.
Add that to his little Aussie dictionary.
Yeah.
Because we're about 5 years behind England, so if England's a bit behind America, you can just go there and see kind of the trends there, and you... relay it to Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm in the years I've been coming here, you can kind of quickly see all these American candy pop-ups in the supermarkets and the malls and stuff becoming quite popular.
So has there been a temptation to set up your own marketplace website, you know, invest in the broader channels?
I've never done it, no, because I feel... I always say to people who ask me, what would you go, would you have your own website or would you use Amazon? So your own website, you need a lot of money up front for even anyone to even notice your website exists. You need to spend a lot of money on building it, SEO, getting the name out there, branding, awareness, all that kind of stuff. So it needs a lot of money up front, but when you start selling, you keep all your own money. Nobody's taking a cut of your money other than like maybe the card processing fee. It's probably the only... expense that comes out through that website. Whereas with Amazon, you need no upfront money at all, but Amazon takes a cut of every sale. So I always say it depends if you want to put a lot of money in to start with, which is a lot of bigger risk, but over the years it will pay off because you're saving your 20% every time you sell something. Amazon, very little risk, but you're going to lose a lot of money over the years paying Amazon to do the job for you.
When do you know that something's going to start trending downwards? Like, what are the metrics? What are the things that you look for? You say all these things have a bit of a life cycle. How do you begin to know?
I mean, with the food, it's growing very quickly, but I'm under no illusion that that's going to last. I think maybe another 2 or 3 years in it, so I have to keep adding lines.
So what changes when you go, this is starting to be on the nose?
Sales will slow
down. So just
down.
Literally sales?
Yeah.
And it's not predicted by, I don't know, searches on Amazon for something, or there's no other sort of lead metrics that tell you?
No, I just kind of assess the sales every month based on the previous year. So I started with like 3 hampers, now I've got like 50. So I kind of assess them year on year, how it's going. Because I have to do that because of importing the product from America. I need to kind of assess how I think this is going to go over the next 6 months. So there's lines, say for instance, M&M's, they were a massive seller to start with. They've really slowed down because they've started going into American flavours you can never get in a supermarket. So they've obviously slowed down because they can sell it in a supermarket a lot cheaper than me because they don't have to pay for shipping and Amazon fees and stuff.
What about emotional attachment? Have you ever got attached in any way to any of these businesses?
I've never had the idea of I'm going to keep this for more than 3 years. That's kind of...
Not even Yankee Candles?
No, because I don't really care about the product. I've not got no interest in the product at all. As I think I was saying to you, Andrew, the other day, car headlights, I was selling thousands, but I wouldn't even be able to change a car headlight. I don't even know how to unscrew one. Never done it, but I could sell one because all you got to know is that model of selling is the same. So I've never had an affinity to anything.
And have you ever been tempted to... mix and match? Like I was thinking with your cereal and your Fireman Sam, why don't you bundle that up and add a bit of a package deal in your hamper? Has that ever been a temptation?
Yeah. Not really. No.
There's a reason why you're sitting here successful.
Yeah, we're just like, what about candles and headlights in a hamper for the sensitive trading or the sensitive mechanic?
Yeah. It's very true. Maybe I want to get back or look at that. But
And does the current state of play still ignite a passion for you, or is this work?
Still ignites passion.
When the challenge?
When it's massively busy at Christmas time and we're selling thousands of products a day, that is where I live all year for that feeling of having 15 staff at a Christmas time. And yeah, whereas 9 months of the year, I can come to Australia for long periods of time and it ticks along with a few staff. But come October, you won't see me. My social life's gone and I'll be there 16 hours a day. That's what I live for, those feelings. But that's not sustainable throughout the year. I can't work that amount of time with that amount of stress throughout the year. So it's kind of very seasonal. But it's definitely not gotten boring yet.
Is there an issue of focus for you? Because I'd imagine that as you're growing these businesses, you're seeing other opportunities, other products, and you're probably thinking, geez, I could do this over here or I could do this over here, but I've only just started my food thing.
Yeah, I've got a few other businesses that are not, some that are just starting, some that are just ticking along in the background. So a good thing with Amazon is they do what's called FBA, which is Fulfillment by Amazon. So if I want to start a product, they have a way where if I, say, I wanted to import an iPad case, I could send that directly to Amazon and I would never actually see the product. They would store it, and every time someone bought it, they would ship it for me. So people run businesses all over the world that don't actually see the product, because it gets shipped straight from the supplier straight to Amazon, and then Amazon ships it to the customer. So I've got a couple of businesses that run in the background that I don't actually see the products of, but they don't take my focus, and I'm kind of aware now that I need to direct my focus into one major thing, and then throughout the year I work on other little things, because January to October I'm quite quiet. I've got time to look at other things. So big interest to me is coffee. So I sell coffee online, and also done recently a festival in the UK, and that kind of takes up my time throughout the year. But I know when it comes to October, I've got to be all or nothing on the food.
Do people sell experiences on Amazon?
Recently they've bought that in. So like a wine tasting experience. Yes. Yeah. Amazon's kind of taking every website that's
anything you can sell something.
Anything you can sell, Amazon's doing it.
Yeah.
And just trying to do better than everyone else.
You mentioned the coffee festival. Have you done that once?
Once.
What did you learn from that?
Which was an event. So I've never done events. I had absolutely no idea the work it took to get an event up and running.
But you got 3,000 people there, yeah?
Yeah. So that was with a business partner. He's a coffee roaster. So he kind of knows coffee. I drink coffee, but I don't know much about it. He kind of approached me and said, I've got this idea. It's been done in other major cities, but never in Birmingham. That has a great coffee scene. So he said, you're the business, I'm the coffee. Let's get together and make this happen. So that took about 3 months of full-time work prior to today, really. It was our first one. We had over 3,000 people. We were aiming for about 1,200. So that was good. It just proved there was a real need for what we were doing. But that was a lot of hard work and something totally different to anything I've done before. So that really made me a bit nervous. Mm. In probably anything I do on Amazon, I'm never nervous about it. That was very different for me. But again, a very good experience. And I learned a lot about events and things like that and what goes into stuff.
Well, how did you determine your business model, your system for someone that has such a simple, straightforward template through Amazon?
We've been to coffee festivals in the past, seen how they work. I just thought I need a new, fresh challenge, especially, as I say, January to October, I'm quite quiet. I just needed a fresh challenge, really, and when this came along, it seemed exciting to me. I didn't really know what I was signing up for.
But how do they, maybe I'm being naive, but how do they, like, where's the money made for a festival like that?
So I hire the space and the warehouse. Then I sell the pitches inside the warehouse to coffee roasters.
Okay.
So there were 40 spaces in this warehouse. So different sizes and different prices. So I kind of approach all the well-known independent. So it was focusing on independent coffee in Birmingham. So I go to all the coffee shops and know and say, would you like to be involved? Obviously, it's the first one, so people are a bit... But as soon as a couple of big boys sign up, everyone's on board. So we sold that out really quickly. So one stream of income is through the exhibitor space, and then we sell all the tickets. So once you're through the door, everyone's giving away free coffee. That's the only thing. So you pay $10 for a ticket, but you could drink 40 free coffees or free cakes or anything like that. So that's where your streams of income come in.
Mm.
So what's on the horizon for you then?
I move to Australia. Yeah, so probably some years down the line, probably move out to Australia. So, I think eventually that's going to happen. So it's kind of assessing the business scene over here, well, seeing what's...
Have you seen opportunities?
I'm definitely going to try and do an Adelaide Coffee Festival. And then, well, I'm in the process of working on that at the moment. And then Amazon's hoping to come here in the next few years, so that'll be... I'm kind of 10 years ahead of everybody else in that, so I believe that could be a great opportunity for me. So I also do a lot of consulting for companies that want to take their business onto Amazon, so which I really, really enjoy. There's no risk for me. I'm just paid for my brain, really. So I could see that being potentially a thing when Amazon kind of takes over Australia, which I think it will, the day that comes, that day that goes live. I feel like it will change retail forever in Australia. Everyone's going to be scrambling to get on there. So that could be a good thing for me. Or I just start up businesses that I know that have worked in at the USA and the UK onto the Australian platform.
Is there any risk at all with Amazon? I mean, you know, like the same with Google AdWords or Facebook, you know, they tend to chop and change things and it can mean someone's business is wiped out overnight. I mean, is Amazon just going to be this behemoth that just keeps getting bigger?
For Amazon or for me personally?
Well, I guess you're using Amazon. Is there any risk in using Amazon?
Yes. They hold all the cards. They could kick you off tomorrow and you've got no business. It's a massive risk. So certain products that I sell that are imported from the US, they could one day, for instance, Reese's, they could one day say that, and this has happened to me in the past, that I no longer want anyone in the UK selling the US products because we're going to bring out a UK line of Reese's bars. So anyone selling the US is now in breach of contract. So they will just go straight to Amazon and say, Joshua is selling these products, and that goes against your score. Get a couple of those and game over. It's happened to so many people. Yeah. But they have to watch the backs because there's a lot of counterfeiters on Amazon, a lot of dodgy stuff going on. They've got to protect their brand, so I understand why they do it. But that is always an ongoing risk of changing legalities with things, and Amazon don't really put up with that. Even though it's out of your control, because if Reese's came to me and said, stop selling it, no problem at all. But if they go to Amazon and say, oh, I've bought in this new contract that I've got no idea about, there's nothing I can do, they'll just kick me straight off. Yeah, it's kind of a couple of strikes and you're gone.
Mm. I'm looking forward to this rapid fire.
Mm.
So do you want to explain rapid fire?
So we have rapid fire, which should be some quick fire questions. It's up to you, of course, how long your answers are, but I'm notoriously pretty poor at rapid fire. However, I am also very interested in this one because I'm mostly interested around Josh's entry into the Montesi family, which occurs in, what, January?
Officially.
Yep.
Yeah, officially. So marrying my cousin Emma. My first one, Josh, is what were your initial observations about the Montesi family?
Wow.
Is it like the Mafia, the Montesis, is it?
Very similar, yeah.
Who's the godfather?
John Montesi.
John.
Yeah. So for them, their daughter was 26 when I met her, never dated a guy in her life. So I think it was a big deal of my daughter's finally got
the
a boyfriend.
Princess. The princess, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely the princess of the family. So that was, I think, was a big deal for the family, as it would be for any family. And then also, this guy's British. Is my daughter going to leave me? That kind of feeling. So it was kind of doubly difficult for them, which made it in turn quite difficult for me. But she's worth it, so yeah.
Was that the start of rapid fire, Andrew? Or
I don't know if we can call this one rapid fire. It's more just intense personal questions on a podcast. It's going to get back.
As Josh takes a sip of water, he's a fraction nervous. The number of businesses that you have started.
Yep. How many? Started myself, probably 3 or 4. Bought and sold existing, probably 4 or 5.
Do you recall a missed opportunity that you now kick yourself about?
No. I think towards the end of the toy business, we were missing things due to the levels of risk. That's why it came to a head. I'd say there were things there, but nothing that would have made me a millionaire. Yeah.
Do you have to work again, or do you work for pleasure?
I have to work again for the princess.
He's used up his question. Rapid fire is supposed to bounce back.
I had it in my head and it's just slipped out. Have you got another one in the bank?
Do you still drive your VW Golf?
No.
What do you drive?
AMG Mercedes. Yeah.
The toughest moment in your business career thus far?
Definitely having to part ways with a friend / business partner, trying to keep a friendship intact.
Did you get to? Was it kept intact?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes. Yeah, it was. I still see him on a weekly basis, so yeah.
3 words to describe Adelaide for, obviously, when you first kind of landed here and spent your first time here.
Just Adelaide in general or business-wise?
No, Adelaide in general.
Laid back.
That's one.
Yeah.
Even though.
Hot. Because I came in January. Behind. Yeah, I feel it's behind in a lot of ways. Yeah. But I kind of like it because it's slower paced. Probably not my feel for a city, but yeah.
You'll get there, mate. We've got good coffee and stuff. You'll be all right.
He did say he's coming to Australia. He didn't say he's coming to Adelaide.
Yeah, okay. The biggest frustration that you feel Emma will give you when you first get married. The reason why I asked is I saw a little Instagram story of you making an observation that it was Emma's first time you've seen Emma clean.
Wow, she's already killed me for that, so this is going to be a double dose of beatings when I get home. I've never lived with Emma, so I've never seen her clean anything, so she has definitely. So when she lived in England, she lived with my parents, so she assures me that she cleaned on a weekly basis. But I love cleaning. I'm very OCD. So I probably wouldn't even let her clean if she lived with me. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Brexit, good, bad?
Horrendous. Probably
I was going to say indifferent, but I think,
probably cost me so far a few $100,000.
Already?
Yeah, because of the exchange rates.
Of course.
Yeah. Why anybody would want that, I don't know. And anybody that did want it no longer does, because they were all very naive and lied to.
Such a complex issue too, and they didn't know what they were signing up to.
Well, they've been promised things like the leader of the UKIP promising him all the money was going to the NHS, which the day it was accepted, he denied all knowledge of that.
Right.
So, very frustrating for me and for anyone that actually voted in favour of it, really.
Any young, sensible person?
Yeah. But anyone that voted for Brexit now regrets it. But there's nothing we can do about that, so you just get on with it.
Wow. Well, Josh, mate, thanks for coming on to Rooster Radio. The world that you've lived into this point is quite a far stretch from where Andrew and myself play. And so listening to your methodologies and your pragmatic and transactional approach to business has been absolutely brilliant, mate.
Thank you.
And looking forward to getting you back on for part two when you've acclimatized to Adelaide and you've created some parochial business which is coffee related. Looking forward to that.
The good thing is as well with this is I can give you a link and then when someone says, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, just send them the link.
Yeah, so I don't have to have the embarrassment of telling them what I do.
And yeah. good luck for the wedding.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Rooster Radio. Check out our website, roosterradio.biz, to catch up on previous episodes and sign up to our mailing list. And if you like what we're doing, make sure you leave us a review on iTunes.